You're listening to the Illuminaire podcast, where we dive deep into behavioral health topics and shine a bright light on the forces shaping this industry's future. From research and technology to business and investment and more. Here's your host, Dr. Ronit Molko.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Ronit Molko, and thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Illuminaire podcast. Today, I'm excited to speak with my guest, Chris McGough. Chris has spent over 30 years helping governments and organizations to engender new transformative possibilities for a better world. Chris has developed a comprehensive approach to help organizations drive toward consensus and solve problems involving the highest level of stakeholder and technological complexity. Chris is also the author of multiple books on organizational change, including his latest work, Match in the Root Cellar, How You Can Spark a Peak Performance Culture. Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Well, I'm quite honored. Glad to be here. Wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Thank you. So our theme for today is tensions in healthcare, which I think is a really interesting way of looking at what's going on in healthcare. And when you and I talked previously, we've looked at three kind of buckets. First of all, there's the consumer, the service provider, and then the investor in healthcare, right? And as you know, we've seen a huge surge in investment interest from private equity, specifically in autism and other areas of behavioral health. So help us understand, you know, for example, in autism, the customer is the payer, the commercial insurance or the state or the federal government, but the consumer is somebody different. It's the parent, the family, and the child. So how does that tension between pleasing the payer, meeting the payer's requirements, and serving families play out?
Yes. A couple of ways to better understand this tension. First of all, the distinction that's driving this is that when you're running a business, there are things you face that are called problems. Then there are things you face which are called difficulties. And it's very important to distinguish the two. So a problem is like a flat tire on a car. If you do a project called change the tire, the problem disappears. It disappears. A difficulty is like raising a teenager or managing your weight. It's a constant pressure. The only way that you interact with difficulties are you manage them programmatically. Where a problem can be solved by doing a project, a difficulty can only be managed programmatically. And so the tensions you're talking about are just difficulties. You don't solve them, you manage them. And the one specifically of the three, the one that you're talking about right now, is a very common one. The distinction here is consumer of the services, they're extracting the value that you're providing. And then there's the customer, they're paying the bill. So for example, if you take the Mattel Toy Corporation, the child is consuming the value inside the toy. But most times the child is not paying for the toy. The customer, and a lot of people get this little quiz wrong, the customers, a lot of people say, well, who's the customer of Mattel if the child's not? If the child's the consumer, who's the customer? And they say the parents. But actually, the Mattel Corporation doesn't do business with parents. It's not a retail operation. It's a wholesale operation. So the customer of Mattel is like the big toy stores. They're the ones that pay Mattel. And so when you're running a business that has a customer, somebody who pays the bill, that is different than the consumer, someone who extracts the value you provide, there's a built-in tension. And so in healthcare, especially the projects that you and I worked on in autism, when I first met you, you were running a very large operation, and most of the money that you were receiving was coming from the regional centers in California. These are bureaucratic government operations that were doing their best to monitor your quality, and then they were writing checks based on your utilization at a given rate. So they were definitely your customer. And if they called and said they're having a very bad day with you, it would be very important for you to deal with that because that's your money flow. At the exact same time, Your corporation was very large when I met you. It had a lot of consumers, and they were the families of these children with autism. So what happens when the desires of the customer conflict with the desires of the consumer? For example, the customers, the ones paying the bill, the insurance companies, the regional centers, who's ever paying the bill, they want efficiency. They don't want to pay a lot of money. They want to pay the least amount of money to check the box. The parents are trying to get the best care for their child. Now, in a good relationship between the customer and the consumer, they're kind of working together and they're kind of close on what the payer will tolerate and what the consumer will tolerate. It's kind of close. But it can also get askew. The customers can, if you come in with investment money, if an investment banker comes on the scene and puts a lot of money into one of these companies providing services, they can try to make efficiency moves to try to increase their profit. That can, not all the time, that can run counter to this drive for quality from the consumers, the parents of these children. So you can't get that tension out of the system. It's not possible to solve it and make it disappear. All you can really do is manage it by communicating to both parties and finding that optimal center. And it's a daily activity. I was working with one provider now, and they're saying, no, it's an hourly activity, especially on the customer side. It's an hourly activity. It's just one of those built-in difficulties in running the kind of operation that you were running when I met you, which was providing services to children with autism in the home.
So, Chris, we are looking now at potentially, people predict over the next 3 to 5 years, moving from a fee-for-service model with payers to a value-based model, where payers are going to be looking much more closely at performance. It's going to be performance-based reimbursement than hourly fee-for-service. Do you think that aligns the customer and the consumer more? Because if you're demonstrating value to your payer, you're demonstrating better outcomes to your customer.
I think that most people that you ask that question would say yes. Outcome-oriented payment is a trendy thing. It seems like on the surface it should work. Value-based, just it sounds so right. The difficulty with it is, and I hope we get to talk about culture, the difficulty with value-based compensation from your customers is that you can game it so easily, even unattended, especially in the area of healthcare. So much of the metrics are subjective. So I think it will help. I think it's going in the right direction. But if it gets rules-based, where you try to get this desire to control things, if the child does this, this, and this, in this many seconds or this many times a day, if it gets rules-based, it'll probably get gamed and it won't give you the positive benefits that you're looking for. Value-based is, it works really well when everybody really wants it to. Value-based does not work if just a couple people don't want it to. It's a very easy system to game. But I think it's moving in the right direction. And it will eliminate the reverse incentive where the provider, they're just driven to provide as many hours as possible because that's the denominator on their paycheck. And so it will check that incentive, but it's not a panacea.
And should organizations think differently about their customers and the consumers in healthcare than in other sectors, other industries?
Yes, I do. I don't know if this is different than other sectors. But I think that's a really good question, Reneed. And it's something that I've been thinking a lot about. I think that it would help if the providers not only thought of the people they're serving as their customers, but they thought of them as advocates, lobbyists almost, aiming their collective intentions at the customers, the bill payers, whether it's the insurance companies or the government. And I don't know, maybe you could tell your audience or tell me how much this is going on right now, but when you want to influence the payers, you know, to say, hey, we're going to do this, we want you to pay for it, or we need to change this, the providers can certainly aggregate into an association or a shared voice and pressure, explain, enroll the payers, the customers, about their idea, their position, their desires. But I think that the more powerful one is the consumers, the parents. And if you can organize them into a focused message and give them pathways to communicate directly with the customers, with the payers, in your case, the regional centers, insurance companies, I think that that force is better applied from the consumer side than it is from the provider side. So making an effort to organize the customers into a shared perspective, a shared intentionality, and a willingness to communicate that to the payers, I think that's a strategic lever that you'll see. I think it's underexploited right now, and I think in the future, the providers will begin to see how powerful that lever really is.
That's great insight. The second tension that we've talked about is the tension between standardization and customization of, you know, programs, clinical programs. One of the, you know, big needs, certainly in the autism industry, but of course in other areas of behavioral health care, is for companies to differentiate themselves from each other, right? What's our secret sauce? And I think one of the areas that companies are able to differentiate is the degree to which each child gets an individual program that's very specific to their needs and their path and their family circumstance. But that flies in the face of efficiency and profit. So how do we manage this tension?
Great. Okay. It is a tension. And the healthcare industry is not unique or alone in this. This is a tension in almost any professional services organization. So again, I don't have any way to eliminate it from the system, this tension. It's there. But the peak performance leaders, they're mastering, programmatically managing this tension. So you rattled off a few things, but I think the one thing that I'd like to amplify that you rattled off there is the family circumstance. The child is in a system of systems. So that as the behavioral interventionist or who's ever, you know, providing the service directly to that consumer, when they enter that house, when they enter that realm, they are in a system of systems. Some parents are a certain way. Some parents are another way. Other parents are even a different way. The child isn't a punched out thing like, oh, that's category A. Oh, that's category C. So we try to build categories because it just makes it easier to talk about things. But we're in a system of systems. The home itself, the physical structure, the number of steps, how many people are living there. So there are so many variables that we just have this desire to customize. But one of the difficulties with this type of business is it really is a rather thin margin. I mean, you have to run a level of efficiency to keep your business open. And efficiency is a function of standardization, because standardization simplifies your training efforts. Standardization simplifies your recruiting efforts. You can explain the job better. Standardization simplifies your conversion rate on sales because you have a consistent way to explain why you should provide the service. Standardization has many, many, many good elements to it. So does customization, because if your BIs, and you had some great ones, if they have a good heart and they have the freedom to customize, they're probably going to design something that is superior to any standard model. So once again, and I wish I was younger and more idealistic, and I wish I had a silver bullet, but I don't. Your peak performance leaders, what I think they're going to do, and I think they are, is they're very carefully going to put as much standardization in the system as possible for all those good reasons that I just rattled off and you know. But they are going to leave some discretionary space for the behavioral interventionists or the direct providers of the service at the front line. And I think that that little bit of space that they're giving them can be disproportionately valuable to that child and to that family. But I'm going to just draw a number out of the air. I really, Renit, and I'd appreciate, you're the expert on this, but I really think it's kind of, I'm making this up, but like kind of 90% standardized and 10% provider discretion.
I think it varies in the industry. We see anything from 100% standardized, where everyone's getting kind of the same cookie cutter program, to completely customized, typically in much smaller providers who have 25 clients or 35 clients where you can do that. I think the differentiators are the ones that, as you say, have a minimum bar. You know, everybody will receive this minimum bar of quality, this minimum standard. And then beyond that, we customize and we individualize to your program and your needs.
Right. And you just brought up a really important point. Actually, you were my gateway into this industry, but I've kind of worked with other companies now. And so I'm starting to get a horizontal look at the industry itself. And the difference between someone like you, who was building a scaling business, you were adding capacity, you were selling into various states, you were expanding. The difference between what you were doing, which is a leader who's scaling, and the cottage industry, which in the autism space, there's a lot of it. That's a lifestyle company. You use the number 25. Well, I think it's, yeah, anywhere between say 15 and 25. And they're just in the DC, Washington, DC metropolitan area, there are so many like small, it's a very fragmented business. So I want to amplify something that you said, because I think it's vitally important. In the cottage industries, and I don't mean cottage industries like disparagingly, I just mean like in the lifestyle businesses, they're not trying to scale this thing. They really can customize much more because they're not training. How many people a week were you training when you had 800 employees with like 30 to 40% attrition rate? We were
probably hiring 40 to 50 a month. Yeah.
Right. But the people that I'm meeting in the smaller businesses who have no intention on going large, they're training one person a quarter. So they don't need that efficiency. So I think I can understand why this particular business is so fragmented. And I can see it being bought up now and, you know, consolidated. But those consolidators are going to have to be careful of a couple of things. They're going to have to be careful not to overstandardize the entire program. And they're going to I would recommend being very careful to listen to the small companies they're acquiring for unique best practices that could be entered into the efficient recipe of the system. They can't come in overbearing. And if they come in overbearing, they could miss some gifts. They could miss some really good innovations that are happening in those small companies that they could generalize. They're going to miss them. But more importantly, in those small businesses, those people have a lot of discretion. They're like artists. And if you try to put them into a machine, you're going to increase your attrition rate even higher. So, you know, it's just a really exciting business for peak performance leaders who understand that they're dealing with intractable dilemmas and they enjoy programmatically, daily, weekly, monthly, managing these dilemmas, managing these tensions. They're the kind of people that are going to be very successful running these businesses.
So we've touched a little bit on the tension between the provider and the investor, right, the private equity firm, but I think one of the tensions is providers might want to help as many people as possible, whereas investors might want to approach it differently. Certainly, there's some providers who focus on things like, you know, I'm going to focus on underserved territories, which means you're dealing with very remote families living in very remote locations. You know, it just adds a complexity of service that may not appeal to an investor because they want deeper penetration in a more robust market. How do you manage these tensions between the investor's ultimate desired outcome of making a financial return and doing good in the world and providers perhaps less focused on the long-term, you know, financial outcome, much more on the clinical mission-driven service delivery aspect?
Well, I think the world's given us enough space where we can kind of do both of those things. I think where I'd like to start is the distinction between businesses and causes. A business is going to generate its cash from operations. So it's going to generate the cash necessary to run the business by the utilization of its staff at a given rate. A cause generates its revenue from gifts. So a cause is going out to their customers, basically, usually high net worth people who write checks to put into the business because the business is not generating enough cash to run itself by revenue or by operations. So it's always looking for cash from donors. And they're both legal. They're both wonderful models. They're both fantastic. So there is a difference between a business and a cause. Now, inside of a business, and I think this gets really mixed up, inside of a business, there are two models. There's the for-profit model and the not-for-profit model. But both of those models generate their cash from operations. And that's where I think that I run into a lot of people that call their business a nonprofit when it doesn't generate enough cash to run itself from operations. They're always asking for money from donors. So they're just causes. So there we are. We have businesses and causes. Wonderful. Inside of businesses, we have for-profit, not-for-profit, both generating their cash from operations. It's just for-profit, takes the profit and just, you know, gives it to people. The not-for-profit has very specific ways that it uses excess cash from operations. So fortunately, human beings have designed three wonderful models. So we have these needs in Appalachia. We have these needs in low-density places that are difficult to get to. Well, we have models like causes that are wonderful to operate there. And we have people in the United States and around the world who are willing to write those checks. But you need to, like Confucius says, wisdom is the correct naming of things. You have to name those causes. And your media, how you advertise, how you sell, all of the things you do to attract cash are very different in a cause because you're appealing to rich people or people who have not high net worth or discretionary cash. And in the businesses, for-profit, not-for-profit, your media is generating demand. You're trying to appeal to the consumers. So they set up a little different. They act a little different. And the CEO is spending their time in different ways. In the cause, she's spending her time really with the high net worth people. In the businesses, she's spending her time with the consumers and with the customers of that business, the payees, the insurance companies. And where I really think that it's going to work great is if you call things correctly. So with these three models, we can decide we're going into this area to work. And these are the demographics and logistics of that market, of that sector. Well, which one of the models works best there? I think that's really all we have to do. Where I don't think it's going to work out is, you know, trying to operate a business in a rural, difficult to get to place that doesn't have the volume necessary to support the infrastructure of the business. I don't think that I've seen a lot of frustration with that.
Thank you, Chris. That makes complete sense. I really appreciate you joining me today to talk about these three areas of tension in healthcare. I think it's fascinating to look at it that way, think about it that way, and you've given us some great tools. Clearly, we have a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about culture and peak performance leadership. So I am going to ask you to join me in part two of this conversation and share your thoughts about that. Thank you so much for joining me today. And to my listeners, I look forward to you joining us for part two of this conversation where we're going to explore more about culture and peak performance. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Illuminaire podcast with Dr. Renit Molko. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe, rate, review, and share our show with other listeners. See you next week.